ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भागवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। This morning we're reading from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 3, the birth of Lord Krishna, text numbers 52 and 53. We'll read the 53rd verse, Sanskrit. Yashoda, Nandapatni, cha, jatam, param, abhudyata, na kalingam parishranta nidraya pagata. Krishna's mother in Gokula.
Krishna's mother in Gokula.
Nanda Padni, the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Cha, also. Jatam, a child was born. Param, the Supreme Person, abhudyata, could understand, not, tatlingam, whether the child was male or female, parishranta,
because of so much labor,
or too much labor, actually. Nidraya, when overwhelmed with sleep, apagata smitihi, having lost consciousness, devakya shayanenyasya vasudevo tadarikam pratimuchya pradorloham aste purva avritaha. Vasudev placed the female child on the bed of Devaki. Bound, oh, there's another one. Devaki, right?
Devaki.
Devaki. No, it's Devaki. But everybody says Devaki. Is it the A word?
I think in French it's easier, Devaki.
Huh?
Devaki.
Yeah, it's the proper pronunciation is Devaki. Because the I is long, not the A.
In France or French, we all say it's easier in French because
it's easier in French because?
Because we're using pronunciation Devaki sounds right.
Yeah. It's easier in Hindi and Sanskrit also. Anyway. Vasudeva, yeah, you gotta be careful you don't say Vasudeva either, because that's Krishna. It's Vasudeva, not Vasudeva, it's Vasudeva. Vasudeva placed the female child on the bed of Devaki, bound his legs with iron shackles, and thus remained there as before. Amazing. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yashoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born to her responsively. Vasudev placed the female child
on the bed of Devaki,
bound his legs with iron shackles, and thus remained there as before. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yashoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Purport. Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev were intimate friends, and so were their wives, Yashoda and Devaki. Although their names were different, they were practically non-different personalities. The only difference is that Devaki was able to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had been born to her and had now changed into Krishna, whereas Yashoda was not able to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Yashoda was such an advanced devotee that she never regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply loved him as her own child. Devaki, however, knew from the very beginning that although Krishna was her son, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan, no one regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When something very wonderful happened because of Krishna's activities, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the cowherd men, the cowherd boys, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, and the others, were surprised. But they never considered their son Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes they suggested that some great demigod had appeared there as Krishna. In such an exalted status of devotional service, a devotee forgets the position of Krishna and intensely loves the Supreme Personality of Godhead without understanding his position. This is called Kevala Bhakti and is distinct from the stages of Jnana and Jnanamayi Bhakti. Thus end the Bhakti Vedanta purports of the 10th canto, 3rd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna. Two more chapters Prabhupada completed before he left. Huh? Incredible. So, this is very unique situation. It is evidence of the fact, as Jiva Goswami states, that in Goloka Vrindavan, the opulence overcomes the sweetness. But in Gokula, because of the humanness of the pastimes, the sweetness surpasses the opulence. And, No, Goloka. Yeah. It's non-different, but there is a difference. Many gopis and personalities joined the pastimes in Gokula from their previous situations outside of Krishna's association, like all the sages in the forest of Naimisharanya and many others who were sadhan siddhas. But in Gokula, everybody's eternally nitya siddha, eternally liberated soul. And Boma Vrindavan, or the Vrindavan which is not easily perceived, still nevertheless it is being manifest within the realm of the material world. Lord Shiva is never contaminated by anything, but because he is Krishna, in touch with the mode of ignorance, he's not exactly the same Sada Shiva that he was in the spiritual world. Anyway, these pastimes are very sweet, and here we find that Devaki, she knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even, the interesting thing is, in jail, she gave birth to, you know, 7 children, and I'm not exactly sure how they worked that out. what kind of, we hear that Nanda Maharaj was shackled in the prison. I think they must have had some kind of, like, wealthy persons. They go to jail, but their jail is more like a country club than a jail, because they have so much money. And I think because Devaki was the cousin sister of Kansa, and Vasudev was very exalted. Also, it seems like somehow or other they had, you know, a bed and facility and etc. Otherwise, how did they conceive children? But here it's explained that just like the only thing I can think of that parallels this is, it's a little strange. Get ready for this one. Kirtananda, at one point he was in jail, living in a house. They put a shackle around him, but it was such that they could, by radio, by signal, they could tell his movements wherever he went. So they have that kind of system. And I guess the shackles were done in such a way that Vasudev had facility to move or whatever. Anyway, Devaki conceived. Of course, first Krishna appeared in the mind of Vasudeva, and from his mind was transferred to the womb of Devaki. And everybody could understand that some effulgent personality had taken shelter in her womb. And of course, when he came out of the womb, although here it talks, it doesn't appear that Devaki underwent child labor. You don't read about her being exhausted. I'm not sure how long her pregnancy lasted. I don't think it was 9 months or anything like that. I think it was quite quickly child Krishna came out. Anyway, Yashoda did undergo child's pregnancy, and she bore the child, and then there was actual labor, and the child was delivered. So she was very exhausted. And you'll find, especially in hospitals, they'll have a nurse who is assigned to give the accurate time of birth of a child, because the mother cannot be relied upon to either take down the accurate time or even remember it after such a very heavy labor can last for even up to days, right? And the last part of it is quite intense, painful, exhausting. And it's one of the lessons that women are blessed with, that they, you know, they renounce sex life after bearing so many children. This is not worth it. So men have to get kicked in other ways, but women have direct experience. And Not that they're supposed to avoid their schooling. It's natural to bear children. But after, you know, 40 or 50, say, they're ready for vanaprastha life and later on for renounced life. So these are all wonderful lessons. But here, Yashoda, she actually couldn't remember. You know, one would think, oh, a daughter, you know, and especially in Hindu families when they desire a son, you know, girl, okay, you know, something like that. But no, she couldn't even remember. So, when she did actually awake later on and found baby Krishna, now, it's, I'm not sure exactly, everybody was asleep. Yashoda did not remember whether it was a boy or a girl. It's possible that she delivered the child herself, but I doubt it. You would think the nurse or the midwife or whatever did remember whether it was a boy or a girl. But somehow the yoga maya was at work here. The whole journey of Vasudeva from Mathura to Vrindavan is, you know, amazing how he escaped from the prison, how he crossed the river in a stormy night with baby Krishna in a basket on his head, and how all of that took place. And it's at least 10 kilometers from Mathura to Gokul. So it was certainly an exceptional paranormal or transcendental experience. And therefore, we just have to understand, or we just have to accept that this is what happened. So when Yashoda awoke and saw her child, boy, Krishna, she was happy, just like any mother. Here's my baby. And for Nanda Maharaj, their only son, the heir to his throne, so to speak. He was the king of Vrindavan. And maybe they were all Vaishyas, but still he was the king. And here was his only child. So there, it was quite a cause for celebration. And in Krishna's childhood, you would think that they would, I mean, they did notice all the wonderful things that happened, but they just could not think that he was God. It was beyond their ability to think. Or they were like protected there. You know, just, I can only parallel it with our appreciation for Srila Prabhupada. Out of love, there are people who will criticize Prabhupada. Recently in Brazil, Giridhari was telling me about one man who came, and he, quite a relatively well-to-do person, educated, he got a book of Srila Prabhupada, loved it, then he bought all the books, read them all, and then he called up Giridhari and, you know, started heavily criticizing, because he was a Christian, but he was still looking. He wasn't just looking for something to find fault about us. He was actually, he was hoping there would be something there in the Bhagavatam for him. But then he read how Krishna returned to, was in Mathura, and, yeah, was it, you know, Mathura, And there was one dobi who had a lot of cloth and everything, and Krishna wanted some cloth, and the dobi wouldn't give it to him, so he chopped off his head. He said, what kind of god is this? Just because the guy won't give him a little cloth, he chops off his head. Yeah, it's a bewildering pastime for him. But it's just one of those things. He does not understand the position of Lord Krishna. And similarly, it is hard for people to understand the position of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, that although Krishna is doing, you know, swallowing forest fires and killing giant demons, lifting Govardhan Hill with his baby, and, you know, even if he lifted it with both hands, it would have been amazing, but just with his little left hand, and not even his right hand, you know, his left hand pinky. I mean, he wasn't a southpaw, he was a right-hander. But, see, still, they just thought, oh, this really an interesting son we have. But they couldn't think that. I mean, only God could do those kind of things, but they just could not understand it. And that is, love is blind. It really is blind. I've seen it over and over and over again, and I've learned a lesson. Well, kind of knew it beforehand, but you know, if you're a counselor, you have to be very, very careful in counseling families, because what'll happen is a husband and wife will have a little fight, and you'll come in and advise something either to the wife or to the husband, and then somehow or other they'll get back together again, and then they'll criticize you and come down heavy on you. Because, you know, underneath, although they fight here and there, but they're actually attached to each other. And more or less blind to their faults. To each other's faults. So it's not inconceivable. And the residents of Vrindavan, not only Nanda and Yashoda, but all the residents of Vrindavan, they were immersed in yoga maya. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he worshipped the residents of Vrindavan. We are also in that line. The other acharyas elevate people to the level of sakha, sakya ras, or friendship, but only the Gaudiyas really are directing their followers to Madhurya Rasa, which is, there's nothing wrong with Sakya Rasa. Love of God on any level is eternal, transcendental, wonderful, but the highest intense feeling of reciprocation with God is this, like a paramour, not even just svakya, but parakya, or like a lover. Complete wanton abandon. Completely rejecting all social custom, all types of potential criticism, and just surrendering to your beloved. So that mood between Atma and Paramatma, between the soul and the Supreme Soul, between the devotee and Bhaktavatsala, is unique and it's intense. And the residents of Vrindavan, of course, they had different moods. We see Yashoda. Here it's described that Vasudeva and Devaki are practically the same personalities in the sense of their qualification. They both performed austerities to associate with Krishna, and not just for a few months or a few years, but for thousands of years. And they got the opportunity, but in a slightly different way. Vasudeva and Devaki, their mood is not exactly tinged, but they can't go farther than that, because they know Krishna is God. And to forget Krishna is God is higher. Amazingly enough, we're taught to remember we're all sadhakas, and we have to constantly remember Krishna's God. We could, you know, you see sahajiyas. That's there. They take something that's very exalted and they try to make it very cheap, easily available to everyone and anyone. There was this guy in Croatia. What was his name? Gopal Prema. Yeah, he was a riot. I think he was somebody's disciple at one point. But he wrote books, I think he wrote a book or something, he had followers, everything, and he would just talk the most nonsense gibberish about Krishna as if he was on such an exalted level, you know. And it was quite interesting to see a Western sahajiya born out of, or at least having gone through, some part of the Krishna conscious movement. He got his knowledge or understanding of Krishna by being a follower of Srila Prabhupada in the beginning. It's another Prabhupada said that the most despicable, certainly one of the most despicable qualities in a person is ungratefulness. And everybody on the scene today, right from A to Z, even up to Tripurari, who the folks at Mandala glorify to the nth degree, they all forget where they got their start in Krishna consciousness from Srila Prabhupada. And they're so ungrateful. No mention of Srila Prabhupada, no emphasis on his being our acharya. And I suspect it's because they just can't surrender to his teachings. He's offering us an opportunity to become completely pure and to come to the highest level, but after practicing surrender, after serving the spiritual master and serving the mission of Srila Prabhupada completely to his satisfaction and to the level we know we should. In other words, there's so many things that Prabhupada told us to do. And until we have endeavored, Prabhupada came back to Mayapur in 1975, and he was speaking to Bhavananda, and Jayapataka, I think, was there, some other devotees, and he said, so now, my Guru Maharaj asked me to preach in the Western countries. He said, now I've done that. He said, now I have my programs, I have my desires, or my plans, something like that. I forget the word he used, but he was talking about Vrindavan and Mayapur and Bombay. Those projects were very dear to him. Of course, he's still, some of his desires are unfulfilled. The Mayapur project, the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. He described it. He gave a description. He told Kamal Krishna Goswami one day while driving, turned around and he said, Oh, he wanted, he said, build a 25-story building in Mayapur. He said, if you do that, then Bhakti Vinod will come back and personally take you back to Godhead. but he was also, I'm not sure if, he wanted a temple in Puri. There are a few things. He wanted Varnashram, he wanted so many things, but he had a few specific projects. So, even these devotees find fault with Prabhupada, and therefore use that as an excuse to leave his mission. But if we are, you know, once you take shelter of an acharya like Srila Prabhupada, there's no question of finding fault. You have no capability, you have no understanding of his vision, his plan, etc. And B, it's just totally unchaste. So the same thing, the residents of Vrindavan, not to say that Vasudeva and Devaki were unchaste, but their mood was different. The residents of Vrindavan, they couldn't see Krishna in any other light, except for as he's a Vrijabasi. And you'll find, even today, amongst the Vrijabasis, they openly say that Krishna is given too much importance. Radharani is much more powerful than Krishna. And they go on this whole thing about Radharani. And they'll describe the pastime. I mean, Radharani, when she gets angry, there's one description it took place in the spiritual world, but there's one devotee, I forget her name. So Krishna, after leading the Rasa dance one time, he was wandering in the forest and he met her. And he actually had 7 sons through her. Yeah, I know, it's amazing. You never hear about that. I never heard of Krishna having any sons with any gopis. Okay, in Dwarka, fine, he had wives. But this gopi had 7 sons. It's a wonderful leela. But at one time, Radharani became so angry that she gathered together a billion of her friends and went marching towards Krishna and this devotee, I forget her name, Gopi. You don't hear about her in Gokula pastimes, but she's there in Goloka. And so Krishna and she were both so afraid when they heard that Radharani was marching to where they were with a billion of her friends. Very powerful. Okay, I'm going to stop there.
Then you get the Radharani's entire existence is simply for Krishna's pleasure, so even her anger is not obvious pleasure for Krishna. She doesn't act separately from Krishna's pleasure.
Well, Prabhupada describes Lord Ramchandra as a typically henpecked husband. Krishna also, that was his relationship with Radharani. He was very, seemingly, he was very attached to her. And even though she got angry and chastised him, he was still very attached. And you're right, he got pleasure in one sense.
Okay, I just have to clarify that the difference between Goloka, Vrindavan, and Gokula, which I read in Dharma Sutra, and I'm sort of forgetting. Krishna. I mean, the globe of the Naga is not just here on the earth.
Gokula. Gokula is manifest here. Yeah.
And when we say Bala Vrindavan, it's the manifestation within the...
That's Gokula in Vrindavan that you don't see. And there's a whole description. There's this literature. I forget which scripture. I'm not sure if it's Goswami or other acharyas, but there's a description of Krishna's daily activities. And, Ashtakaliya Lila, yeah. Where is that described? Oh, Govinda Lilamrita, okay. Yeah. I haven't read any of those books, so I just read about them.
We don't really, that's part of Hansa Kata, isn't it?
Yeah. Someday, yeah.
What it basically boils down to
okay.
Do I have faith or not in Prabhupada?
Do what?
Do I have faith or not in Prabhupada?
Well, it's not blind faith, it's rational faith. You read his books, and they're definitely not like any other literature you've ever read. They're so pregnant with dynamic philosophy, and philosophy is the king of all sciences. There's no other science as important as philosophy, because whatever you can do with anything else, a philosophy determines how you use it or what direction you take. So it's not that it's blind faith, but ultimately, yeah, it's faith. Yeah?
Because when I go on the streets from books, and lately I've been going about, and this is hard, like, I go there and I come back, and in fact, I haven't had the money for a while. It's just, there's so many people with so many ideas, and they're presenting, like, is it really what I'm doing, really the best thing? So, I mean,
the best thing is for you to have an intense program in the morning, not only the morning program, but extra reading, extra chanting, so you're fixed and insulated. Now, if you become an expert debater, and if you listen to Prabhupada talking with people, the good thing is to listen to the conversations. And he debated with so many people, and they would come up with so many different things, but he would just keep focused and catch them. He would go back to the same thing over and over again. He would just catch them on the they just weren't consistent. They were inconsistent about they would bring in one thing, and if that didn't work, then it, totally unrelated, they were just arguing for argument. There was no realization or as such. So, you know, he would just, like this one lady I was listening to recently in Iran, she was saying, because Prabhupada was saying, you know, what is your name of God? And, you know, is it Allah? And, you know, she was trying to express how the name of God is with God, but nobody knows the name of God. And Prabhupada was saying, well, do you know that? He said, yes, I know it, but I can't express it. So then Prabhupada said, so I know your name, but I can't tell you your name. And everybody laughed, because she was saying really stupid things, thinking that it was very esoteric and very mystical, and it was just nonsense. But if you want to do that, then you're probably not going to have much time to distribute many books. In other words, if you want to let the books do the preaching, you've got to be able to deal with people, sidestep their questions, and invite them. I'll give you an example. It's not such a good example, it just came to my mind. When the devotees were distributing in O'Hare Airport in Chicago, so at one point, the administration started announcing over the loudspeakers that there are people in the airport who are distributing books and we have nothing to do with them. You have no obligation to buy any books or give them any money, and it was quite nasty, you know. So the devotees took it, they would stop people and they would say, did you hear the announcement about distributing books? That's us, you know. Here, take with. Because people, you know, they were so dull-headed. So you've got to be like that. You've got to be a jiu-jitsu expert, you know, a judo. Use their energy to give them a book. I remember going door to door, this was in 1970, I guess, in Southern Cal, along the beaches, or it was somewhere. Anyway, I remember on a few occasions meeting people who would bring up some name, like Maharishi or something, Mirababa, or whoever the well-known Mayavadis were at that time. And so our reaction was, you know, someone say, you know, is this what Maharishi did? And we were selling Bhagavad Gitas, and you know, we say, yeah, Maharishi should read. You know, it tells all about this. This is the final, 12 chapters. He only does 6, you know. So we just take whatever energy they gave us and then give them a book, sell them a book, because if they read the book, we get all the preaching they need. But if you want to have a little fun and debate with people, then you got to really focus your mind.
Well, I always find myself drained. What's on myself? Drained?
Drained?
Sometimes. I mean,
if you're expert, yeah, and you're convinced that you can only achieve by extra reading, extra chanting.
And also, just by doing it at night.
Sure.
There was somebody yesterday. I said the argument like last time I come from chemicals, and then they said, I read a book and they did it.
Yeah. Well, the latest thing now is. Latest scientific evidence now is that all matter is just sound waves, energy. Huh? Yeah, and, you know, it's there in the Bible, in the beginning was the Word. In other words, gross comes from subtle, not subtle comes from gross. So subtle energy gave rise to gross material energy. So life comes from life. And then this Shia Voss or somebody or other, some lady in southern Florida, I forget, maybe it's Miami or somewhere. Anyway, she's in a coma for the last 13 years and so there's a big article. They really don't know what's going on with her. And the reason is that there's an article, The Twilight Zone of Consciousness, in Time magazine. They acknowledge that there's so little research into consciousness. They know so little about consciousness. So on the one hand, we're saying, that here's evidence that matter is nothing but sound waves, sound vibrations, or wave patterns. That's what matter is made up of. And so in other words, subtle influences gross, or gross evolves from subtle. And consciousness, what do we know about consciousness? Here's some knowledge for you. You don't know anything about consciousness. This is how Prabhupada would deal with it. Okay, you admit you don't know anything about, so take this knowledge. Here's knowledge of consciousness. Yeah. First of all, admit that you don't know anything, and then here. Take this. It's all about consciousness. Why don't you take it? You know? Why don't you, he was preaching to this woman, or there were a couple of them. I guess they were Persians, or Iranians. So, you don't know the name of God, so take Krishna. Makes sense. Anyway. Yes, sir. I didn't quite hear all of that. You'll have to relay it to me. I'm a little deaf.
Well, what is that called when the person becomes into Prabhupada's shelter association and gets started with Krishna consciousness, grows up, and completes Krishna consciousness elsewhere?
He's just not able to surrender.
Not in capacity to surrender totally. The lack of realization.
Yeah.
But this is
described in consciousness. So this surrender has to come from the awareness of consciousness.
Free will.
Huh? Free will, yeah. But the thing is this, and Prabhupada described it one time, Chandanacharya was asking Prabhupada, and it's right there in folio, a number of disciples had gone away, and he was asking about, they were now breaking the principles, and, you know, what is their situation? And Prabhupada got quite upset and said, what is their character? You know, like, we see the result of having people in political office who have no character. You know, what havoc it plays. So what to speak of that, spiritual people who take vows. So Prabhupada was just berating them like anything. They're worse than animals. They take vows and they promise, and a man is as good as his word. And then all of a sudden, so easily, they break their word. No integrity at all. So people who... What's the third offense against the chanting of the holy name? Disobey the orders of the spiritual master. They've come to Prabhupada. They had every option. They didn't have to take initiation. And by the time Tripurari joined, it was at least a 6-month waiting period. In the early days, you know, you could get like that, but they had 6 months to think about it, to see. And then they took vows. And then they just, you know, went away, divorced themselves from Srila Prabhupada in the sense that, you know, now, it's like when Prabhupada left and we had our zonal acharyas and they were outwardly, even though it was a feeling. I don't know if anyone actually verbally spoke it, but it was certainly there in the grapevine that these are the new Prabhupadas. Guru Tattva, right? Once you're on that Guru Tattva level, that's it. You know, you're all the same. So, here you have people who they no longer see it necessary. to give credit, etc., for their spiritual advancement to the man who initiated them, all three initiations. What is that? Not very chaste. What I can see, that I take someone as a spiritual master, and then after some time I get disappointed with him, and I have a Siksha guru, so I give more credence to my Siksha guru, inspires me a little more. But it's not that I reject my Diksha guru, he gave me birth. I'm eternally indebted to him, but I may also be more submissive, not submissive, I may be more appreciative of other people who inspire me, Siksha guru, like that. Okay, I can understand that.
That's
huh? He never talks about Prabhupada. He never gives any credit to Prabhupada. He is a person, he's one of the new acharyas. By seeing his activities, in other words, I haven't discussed with Sai Baba. No, but the level, and not the activities, but I haven't discussed with Sai Baba that all his followers call him God. Now he says, I don't say, they say. But he accepts the role. He sits on a throne and wears Krishna's crown. But the point I'm saying is that he's writing Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, and why doesn't he give credit to Prabhupada? Like, for example, Jagat Guru. He constantly talks about Prabhupada. He's separate from ISKCON, but he's constantly glorifying the spiritual master. He's not assuming any airs. Yeah, that's the problem. And he gives good credit to Sridhar Maharaj for helping him in his spiritual life. No problem. No problem. And even there are followers of Puri Maharaj. I took a mantra from Bhakti Pramod Puri. He gave me one Nisringa mantra, so I took initiation from him. But it's not that I don't glorify Prabhupada. I like Puri Maharaj, great soul, really a brahmana, sadhu, sannyasi. Yeah, exactly what I said. Gratefulness. And, you know, I have not heard of a book by our friend, My Life with Prabhupada. He had so many pastimes with Prabhupada. He could write about it. Prabhupada talked about this in Mayapur. He was walking in the fields in Mayapur. And he was talking about Mayavadi gurus, how, you know, they take help from their guru until they feel that they've achieved realization of being God, then they reject him. And so, well, he actually did it by, he was walking along and he had to go over the little, what would you call them, irrigation channels filled with water. So you would walk along the edge, not on the field where the crops were, but a kind of mound that was on the side of the irrigation channel, and there would be earth build up on either side. So he's walking along there with the devotees on the morning walk, and he came to a channel where he had to step over. So Bhavananda quickly came up and gave him his arm to help him across. And as soon as Prabhupada got across, he went like that. Bhavananda was shocked. And the Prabhupada said, that is it. You know, as soon as they get to the place where they want to go. And so I'm not saying anything about anybody, but that's what it appears to be like, similar.
Perhaps if that has evolved in the proper mood.
Yeah, well, you just never hear any glorification of Prabhupada. I mean, that's an extreme case. Yeah.
Oh, but there was this person, he's not that quickly, but he got the Bhagavad Gita from a store. And it was not Prabhupada's, but in that Bhagavad Gita, I don't know from who it was, but in that Bhagavad Gita, he said that was all the commentaries that he wrote.
Not a good idea to close, to have both, you know, look at someone with one eye. It's, yeah, well, it's a simple thing, subtle thing, but if you ever saw a Prabhupada, you'd go like this. Close both eyes.
Oh.
Simple solution, yeah.
But at the beginning of the book it says to be Prabhupada's books.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know which book is that. I thought it was Sri
Prabhupada's
book.
No, no. He really doesn't talk about it. He calls him Swami Maharaj. Prophet Swami Maharaj. Yeah. If he at all refers to him, he calls him Swami Maharaj. Well, that sounds like estrangement to me, because okay, I have my family and I'm trying to preach to them. Not much result, except for they're not making progress and they're not getting worse. If they could get worse. As karmis. But in order to do that, at least I try to understand their mood, and, you know, when I'm with them, I try to not violate their mood. So, Prabhupada's disciples, we call him Prabhupada. He gave us that name to address him. And so why all of a sudden he's become Swami Maharaj? It's violating a mood which all Prabhupada disciples... Okay, we acknowledge Bhakti Siddhanta Prabhupada also. There can be more than one Prabhupada. Vishnu pod, this pod, that pod. Reserved for exalted people. But how can a disciple just all of a sudden revert to, you know, someone who has, as if he has no connection? The Gaudiya Mutt may refer to him as Swami Maharaj, and that technically may be his title, his sannyas name, Swami Maharaj. But, yeah.
I don't know if it's my place to make a comment on this, but in the Lila Mrita,
the Lama Thea,
yeah, he's right, interviewed. Come somewhere, he'd always not show any regard for the Bapu.
Yeah.
The Srila Prabhupada, you know, he'd say that, you know, his service to Prabhupada was to go to the airport and distribute books. So when he was distributing books, you know, Prabhupada present, he was physically present, you wouldn't take the opportunity to actually have that association, which is very vital if the opportunity is there.
Now, I agree that could be a possible reason, but I also had a lot of opportunity to associate with Prabhupada in India. And I also took the attitude that, oh, Prabhupada's here, let me go out and make more life members, let me do some service to Prabhupada. I was a little shy of his personal association. Otherwise, I would have written a book a long time ago about so many different pastimes, but there's not a lot there. There's something, but it's not inspiring me to write a book. But he's my life and soul. I don't even have any understanding about Krishna at all. To me, life is Prabhupada. So, I think the service also, Bhagavati. Anyway, service to the person Bhagavat or to the book Bhagavat. I have no doubt that devotees who work hard to serve Krishna and serve the spiritual master, they make spiritual progress. They may not spend long hours studying books, but they will develop the essential quality of attachment and devotion. Raga, attachment, and bhakti. That may be our only hope. We're Lord Ramchandra's monkeys in many ways. What qualification do we have? We can never hope to learn Sanskrit. Our youth and our best time for learning is already spent. We can just give our energy to Prabhupada. I think so. What do you think, Padyavali?
I attended a class at Bhagavad, and he had he was preaching that we should worship Bhakti Siddhanta.
It's called jumping over.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Why?
Huh?
He said simultaneously, his guru told him to worship himself, for example.
Fine. Yeah. There's nobody that can compare with Swami Maharaj. No, nobody can compare.
That's not
the level of Prabhupada's realization is so much greater than any of his god brothers. He got the full mercy of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya because he did the service. They all came years later, after Prabhupada's disappearance, to get a little glory. Or whatever. And if Prabhupada hadn't come to the West, they never would have come. None of them. Not even Narayan. Of course they are. We all are. We all are. Eko bahunam yovidadati kama. The one supreme spiritual master who's maintaining all the others.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just party spirit, it's objective observation. It's not just, we could also go anywhere and flirt with all these charismatic old you know, Bengali or whatever preachers, and, you know, we might get caught up in the euphoria. But I just, if it made sense, I would do it. I have no qualms. I want to do what's best for me. But it's too obvious. Anyway, all I know is that, as I said, we have a Srila Prabhupada very close to us. And this is our line, for better or for worse. And everybody and anybody is welcome to do whatever they like outside. Fine. There's 6.5 billion people. Go for it. But don't come to us and tell us what to do. Well, this is our house. We know who our father is. We know who our benefactor is. We know where our loyalties lie. We are grateful for what we have received, and we are attempting to repay our Acharya, Acharya Van Purusho Veda. And that's the end of it, you know. I don't want to talk about these people anymore. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.